Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm an entrepreneur on my second business, a mentor, an author, wife to a fellow entrepreneur, and mother to a magical little girl. On my podcast, I explore topics that fascinate me that will help you unlock ideas to rise even higher in your life. Myself and my special guests will be talking entrepreneurship and how to build better businesses, organization and figuring out how to get more shit done quicker and smarter, staying in touch with our soul, and how to blend business babies with real babies. Let's jump in to this week's episode. Hello and welcome to this week of the Lorraine Murphy Show. Please settle in and make yourself at home. So as you might know by now, season 8 of the podcast is all about one of my greatest passions, which is business. I've had my own business since 2012, and entrepreneurship is a pursuit I devote a ton of time, energy, and focus to, whether it's growing my own business or mentoring others in theirs. In this season, I'm taking you behind the scenes in my business, as well as interviewing business owners I respect enormously. Now, before I jump into this episode, I wanted to do a shout out for your interest, please. I asked in my love letter a few weeks ago if people would be interested in a potential business accelerator that I was kind of pondering, and I got a lot of interest. So I'm building a list of people who would be interested in finding out more. If I was to put together a short business accelerator, which would be over a series of weeks, there's a set agenda and there's a group joins me and we work through almost like group mentoring, but specifically for business. So yes, very, very early days. I've got it hatched out, I think, but keen just to know who would be interested in knowing more when it's ready. So if you get my email with this episode every Friday, there's some buttons in that email. So let me know if you're interested via the buttons in the email, or else you can hit the link in the show notes to register your interest. It's super simple. Just give me your name, email address. And I also want to know if you're a business that's keen to just, you're starting your business, startup, or if you're keen to scale, i.e. grow an established business to be bigger and better and more money and all of the great things. So really, really excited to make that happen. I'm looking at collaborating with someone who I absolutely adore in business. So please let me know if you're interested via the buttons with the email that I send you on a Friday, if you get my email, or else via the link in the show notes. And that's two options for you there to let me know if you're interested. And then, everyone who lets me know they're interested will be the first to find out when things are happening. Okay, on to this week's episode. I am very excited to share this week's one, as in it, I'm sharing the biggest lessons I've had when it comes to what I believe is the most important function of any business, which is sales. Sales are the lifeblood of any business. I really believe there is no business problem that making more money won't make go away. But on the other side, it's also the area that holds the most fear for most entrepreneurs. When I started my business, my first business in 2012, I had zero sales experience. So I had to put myself on a rapid learning curve if I was to make it a success. Thankfully, the learning and practicing paid off and the business ended up turning over multi-millions of dollars a year. Sales is actually one of the areas I coach my mentees most on. So in this episode, I'm sharing why you must educate yourself on how to sell. The book that totally changed the game for me when it came to revenue generation. Why educating your customers is critical, and also when to know not to bother. The hunter, the farmer, and the hunter farmer. This is something I always teach my mentees. How a blend of flexibility and persistence resulted in 100K of new revenue for me. The biggest mistake I see entrepreneurs making when it comes to sales. The simple weekly ritual that can boost your revenue with minimal effort from you. And why reviewing your pricing can actually be better than finding new customers. So let's jump in to this week's episode. I need to be really, really, really clear as I start this episode. Sales is the lifeblood of any business. There is no business problem that having more money won't make go away. That's something I learned very, very early on in the days of my first business. And that's why sales is such an important area and why I'm dedicating this entire episode this week to this topic. When I started my first business way back in 2012, I had absolutely no sales experience. My background was PR. So I had some experience of pitching and ideas to journalists, but absolutely no hands-on exposure to actually going out there and making money for a business. And I was really, really nervous about how I would go selling. And I don't think it helps that sales is seen as kind of like a slimy, greasy, kind of got that used car salesman association in business. And I just didn't know. I just didn't know how I was going to sell. Could I do that kind of inverted commas yucky thing called selling? And I realized that it was an area that I really had to educate myself on. If I was going to go and sell, I was going to have to educate myself and educate myself pretty quickly. Happily, I went on to secure over $1 million in year one in that business. And the business went on to turn over multi-millions of dollars per year. So I think I learned the lessons pretty well. And of course, as with all things business, we're constantly learning how to do things differently and how to do them better each time. So while I say these are my biggest sales secrets in this episode, I'm constantly learning myself. And of course, as I always try to do, I pass back those new lessons to my mentees and also as part of seasons like this on the podcast as well. Because I know for me, when I started my first business, it was very much relationship-based sales. So building relationships with corporates, building relationships with social influencers, and creating deals between those two sides, essentially. Whereas when I started this second business that I'm now in, which is pretty much my own Lorraine Murphy brand, I had to learn a totally different type of selling. So online selling. And it's been, you know, another huge learning curve. I think there's been a huge amount of the sales skills and the lessons that I've been able to pick up and bring over to this second business, but it's still been a massive learning curve in its own right. So in this episode, what I want to do is save you the pain that I've experienced and give you the biggest lessons that I've had when it comes to making it rain cash in your business. How I'm going to structure this is the 11 biggest lessons that I've had. And so 11 biggest sales secrets that I've had. And so how I'm going to structure this episode is through the 11 biggest sales secrets that I have figured out over the last 8 years or so, 8.5 years. So I'm going to jump straight in because I've got a lot I want to take you through in this episode. The first secret that I have realized is that sales is 90% mindset. And I really, really, really mean this. You could read every sales book, go to every sales seminar, follow all of the sales influencers, you know, do all of the things. But unless you actually get your mindset good for selling, and of course that means getting an abundance mindset, getting over all those crappy mindset challenges that we experience, like imposter syndrome, self-doubt, you know, I could go on for hours on that. It's really, yeah, until we get the mindset sorted, then it's very, very unlikely we're going to have success in the sales arena, because we're going to essentially self-sabotage at every possible opportunity if we haven't got that mindset sorted. So if you do want to learn more about how to build a money mindset, I would love for you to go back and listen to my episode number 52. That was in my previous, two seasons ago in my life lesson season. And I talk about in that episode how I've built a money mindset and how I suggest you do the same. So number one, sales secret number one is that sales is 90% mindset. You really need to work on your mindset before you go and learn any of the tactics or anything, and some of which I'll take you through in this episode as well. Sales secret number two, you need to educate yourself. I remember Wade saying to me many, many years ago, isn't it so interesting that you can't do a university degree in sales? No one actually teaches you how to do sales. And yet, if you think about it, for any of you who own businesses and have very, very high performing salespeople in them, they're the most valuable individuals that you have in your entire team. And they're the people that you would almost like go a month without paying yourself in order to pay them their salary if they bring in money for your business. So it is quite an interesting quandary whereby sales is not actually taught to us. It's not taught to us in school, in university. You need to quite actively seek out information on how to be a better salesperson, or how just to learn to be a salesperson from scratch. And that is, you know, it's absolutely vitally important. It's just like anything. If you want to learn how to ride a bike, you have to go learn how to ride a bike. If you want to learn how to sell, you need to learn how to sell. And with this, I'm not talking about learning closing techniques. I mean, obviously that's part of it as well, but just understanding who you are, what kind of salesperson you are, understanding emotional intelligence, understanding human profiling. I mean, another episode that I would really direct you to is my episode on Know Yourself, which is it's part of the life lesson season as well. Because the more you can understand yourself and the more you can understand people, the better a salesperson you're going to be. So educating yourself is absolutely key. And this is something I flung myself headfirst into way back in 2012 when I started that first business, because I was very aware that I was completely incompetent when it came to selling. I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. Now, there's a book that I read that was an absolute game changer for me. And it's it's probably in the top three books that I recommend entrepreneurs to read. It's a book called The Ultimate Sales Machine by a man called Chet Holmes. And Chet Holmes actually worked very closely with Tony Robbins when it came to selling in businesses. And he wrote this excellent book. He actually passed away 2 or 3 years ago. And the book is actually reasonably old. I'm not sure when he wrote it, but I think it's probably about 20 years old now. And even today, the principles that he talks about are just as powerful as they were back when he wrote the book. And the biggest thing I learned about that from that book was Chet Holmes talks about how, as most of us know, sales can be really, really scary. And how he actually reframed sales for himself was sales was just an opportunity for him to make new friends. And I always remember that when I'm picking up the phone to make the cold call, or having the conversation with a potential mentee, or even, you know, when I'm sending out a sales email for a program that I'm running, I think about that all the time. It's just an opportunity for me to make new friends. I really, really, really love that reframe. That's probably the biggest gift I got from that book. So if you want to educate yourself on sales, I would highly recommend you get onto that book as a first port of call, because it's just excellent. I learned so much from it, and I took a huge amount of what Chet recommends in that book into my first business, The Remarkable Script, and also in this business right now. Sales secret number three is educate your customer. So when I started my first business, it was the first talent agency for bloggers in Australia. It was way back in 2012. And bloggers were really an emerging channel back then. There was no such thing as Instagram. YouTube was very, 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 very early days. So when we think about like the amount of social influencers that we have now and how it's like it's a legit business model to have, it wasn't like that 8 years ago. It was very, very, very different. So when I started the Remarkables Group, I started this business that was essentially helping influencers monetize their blogs and their Facebook, as it was back then, and also Twitter to a lesser extent. And the problem I had was that I understood how amazing bloggers were. The company that I left in order to start my business got it, because I had just banged on about it for 2 years straight. And I just assumed that the rest of the world got it as well. And I started this business. The problem that I realized I had pretty much within days of starting the business was that most of the clients that I was trying to sell to had no fucking idea what a blogger was, why they should listen to them, why they were so important. They just had no idea. And through no fault of their own, it was just a very, very early space. It was very early days in this space. So what I realized I needed to do when I read Chet Holmes' book, The Ultimate Sales Machine, I realized that it was just critical was that I started to educate my potential customers. Because what I realized quite early on was that people aren't going to buy something that they don't understand, because they just don't understand it. Never mind understand why they need it and why they should listen to you when you tell them that they need it. So the problem I had was that I was going to PR agencies, media agencies, to direct to big brands like Nestle, GSK. And I was saying, hey, you need to invest in these bloggers. They're amazing. And here's my big, you know, 1 hour sales spiel about this brand new business. I mean, I don't even know what I was talking about, to be honest, so early on. And they were just lazing over because they just didn't understand the space. So when I read the book, I realized, I need to educate them. So rather than me calling the likes of a Qantas and saying, hey, can I come in and sell you my new business? Instead, I started calling Qantas and saying, the likes of Qantas, saying, hi, I've prepared a 90-minute training presentation. It's to train your team on what this blogging space is all about, how it can benefit your brand. And I've dedicated myself to this business, to this space through my business. And I'd really love to come and share this training with your team. And I got so many yeses. And you know what the biggest difference for me was? It just blew my mind. I remember the first business that said yes was Nestle to this presentation, this 90-minute presentation. And up until then, I think this is probably like maybe 2 months into the business. And up until then, whenever I managed to secure some kind of a sales meeting, I would walk into the room and I would meet pretty much the junior members of the team. There would be one, maybe two, if I was lucky, people in the room. And when I went to Nestlé that first day and they took me down like this rabbit's warren of different meeting rooms at Nestlé head office, which is pretty epically massive. And I walked into the room and they had booked this huge, long boardroom. There was 25 people in the room for my presentation. So what I realized was that when we actually position ourselves as educating our potential customers, they're a lot more open to that message because, I mean, there's no way in hell I would have gotten 25 people in that room if I had gone, hey, I just want to come sell to you. I mean, who's going to give up their lunch break to do that? No one. So that was the biggest difference that I found. It was almost like that resistance, that block to people being sold to was removed because the reason they were there was to be educated too. And I did educate them. Now, the great thing about that system, and that game changed my business. I started doing that about 2 months in, and 5 months into the business, we were doing well financially. We were turning a profit. I was paying myself 5 months in, and I was able to double the amount of influencers that we brought on. And I was able to hire my first two team members as well. Within kind of 5 months, I hired my first team member, and at 7 months, I hired my second team member. So this was absolutely game changing for me in my business. So of course, I'm there educating, and this isn't about me having like a hard sales message. However, now that they understand the space, they're a lot more likely to invest in the space. And the first person that they're going to think of investing with is me, because I'm the one that spent 90 minutes training them and really positioned myself as an expert in the space. So educating your customer is absolutely key. And as I said, that was probably the biggest game changer for me in the early days of that first business. And even now in this current business, I need to do this as well. I need to explain. I can't just say, hey, I'm doing this Get Remarkably Organized program, buy it. It's about educating people on, okay, why is it helpful to be organized? What difference is this going to make in your life? And putting a huge amount of educational content out there with the view to that when I do have something that I'm about to sell, that people will be invested in me, that they will trust me, and they will see me as the expert in whatever space it is that I'm creating a product within. So sales secret number three, educate your customer. Absolutely key. Sales secret number four is to get targeted. I wasted so much time in the first year or two of my first business talking to people who were never, ever, ever going to hand over dollars to work with our business. I remember one particular instance. I'd created a proposal for travel bloggers that we represented, and I was working with the travel insurance. Well, working, I thought, chatting to a travel insurance company about them potentially sponsoring these travel bloggers. And I had, I think, three different meetings in North Sydney. So I had to either drive and pay an extortionate amount of parking, or else get taxis back and forth. This is pre-Uber, back in the dark days, pre-Uber and Ola. And I spent hours and hours and hours having conversations with this guy, buying him drinks. You know, it was always on a Friday afternoon he wanted to have the meeting, so I'd buy him drinks. And I realized probably four meetings in, there's no way he's going to spend the money. He's just bored in his job. And even the meetings that we're having, I mean, we'd spend probably 20% of the time talking about my proposal. And then he'd keep steering the conversation back to just having more kind of general catch-up conversations. It was weird. So what I really learned then, and I remember that was a real watershed moment for me, that, okay, I'm not going to waste my time and money, you know, whether it's time being spent going and having these meetings and preparing these documents and also getting the bloggers' hopes up that, oh, I'm having third meeting, this is looking good, when it wasn't. But also money, buying drinks, taxis, the opportunity cost that time and money was huge. So I decided I wasn't going to do that anymore. And rather than going and having meetings with anyone who said, hey, come meet me, and me saying, okay, when, where? What I started to do was to have a phone call with the person. So if someone wanted to have a meeting with me about potentially working with our talent, I would say, yeah, sounds awesome. I'm really, really conscious of your time. Would love to have a phone call with you first, just so we can kind of check if there's a fit there and we can go from there. And I would make sure in that phone conversation, it was essentially screening them and giving them an opportunity to screen me, of course. In that phone conversation, I would say, make sure that they knew what our rates were and also establish whether or not they already had a budget allocated to an activity with us. And at that point, then, if I was saying, okay, cool, they sound like they're actually keen, they've got the money, or they know what kind of money they're expecting to spend with us, then I would go and have that meeting. So I know that may sound a bit mercenary, but we need to remember that time is money. Meetings take fucking hell of a lot of time, whether it's preparing for them, you're doing your research on who the person is, having the meeting, doing the follow-up, and just remembering that, like with every single commitment we put into our calendars, there's an opportunity cost to that commitment. So for me to go and spend an hour in North Sydney having that meeting, that would mean that maybe I wasn't following up with the 10 other proposals that I sent out last week that could have actually turned into paid work. So I think it's very, very important to get targeted with who we're selling to. And particularly in the early days of your business, if you're the only one selling and you're also doing all of the delivery and all of the operations and all of the marketing and, you know, all the buying post-its in Officeworks, you need to be absolutely militant about where you're spending your time and energy. And there's absolutely no time for tire kickers. Time is money. So what we then decide then is, if someone is not interested or they're not ready to buy right now, we need to decide then, do we want to take them on the journey, like continue educating them and trying to get them to a point where they're ready to spend? Or do we instead focus our efforts on people who are more ready to go? And that's ultimately what I decided to do in the early days of that first business. I said, okay, well, this is an emerging space. People don't really get it yet. But rather than me spending 5 years educating one potential client, instead I'm going to go and focus on the people who are interested, those early adopters. And then what would happen then is that the early adopters would jump on board. So for example, Nestle and Woolworths were some of our really early clients. And then what would happen then is that their competitors would see what they were doing, see the results that they were getting and the profile they were starting to build with influencers, and then want to jump on board. So particularly if you've got a business that's in, it's more of a novelty business, or it's new, first to market or early to market, I would really be focusing on your early adopters, giving them 90% of your love. And because, yeah, you could educate someone for 6-7 years, particularly if it's a new space. Sales secret number five is to decide whether you're a hunter, a farmer, or both. So let me explain. There's two very, very different types of selling. And some people are organically one or the other, and some people can kind of push themselves to be either side. It's almost like a introvert versus extrovert, that type of thing. So if you think about a hunter is really good at going out and bringing in new customers. So they will be the person who'll do the cold call, who'll romance the customers until they come on board. And they're really good at going out there and finding fresh meat, essentially, the new biz. Then on the other side of the coin, you've got a farmer. So a farmer is someone who was really, really good at nurturing existing clients and getting them to spend more money with the business. So I think it's very, very helpful if you are a business owner and you are sitting in the sales function, which I believe all business owners should to at least some degree. If you are sitting there and or you've got a sales team and you're trying to figure out like which side of the fence they sit on, it's incredibly helpful to understand what you naturally are, like what your kind of organic tendency is too, because it just means that you can play to your strengths, essentially. So if you're a really, really, really good farmer and you're getting awesome results from that, well, it makes sense to spend 80% of your time and your energy and your focus doing the farming and then just reserving 20% of your energy and focus to the hunting. And I think for me, I'm probably a blend of both. So for example, I'm going to talk about the Remarkables Group for this particular example, but I will talk about more examples from my current business in a moment. When I think about that first business, obviously in the early days, it was 100% hunting, just getting out there, getting those new clients, just starting to build some kind of a client list and build some revenue. And then what happened then was that the customers, I mean, not everyone, but most people were really, really happy, our new clients. And then it would kick into farming mode. So having regular catch-ups with them, going to them with new ideas first. So giving them new ideas first, and also really listening to them on what their current business challenges are and creating some strategies to help them using our products and services in the business. So there's an element in the early days of you have to be a hunter because you need to get those early days customers in. And then you almost transition into farmer mode. So I can do both. I'm actually quite adept at doing both. But I have had team members who are excellent hunters. If I think about Ashley or Tessa in my business, they were brilliant hunters. They would get so excited with that win of a new client. And then I had other people like Sarah, like Emily, who were brilliant farmers. So they were really good at really loving on existing clients and helping them to spend more money with us, essentially. So deciding if you're a hunter or a farmer will really help you manage your energy when it comes to sales in your business, because so much of sales is energy management and keeping your motivation and keeping yourself consistent and persistent. So figuring out what's going to work best for your energy, I think, is a really, really good idea, and has helped me a lot in my business. And that hunter versus farmer idea is something that I've worked with a lot of my mentees on as well. And it's been a real eye-opener for them when they realize where their natural tendency sits and how they can then use that to maximize their efficiency when it comes to bringing in money for their business. Water break. Okay. Sales secret number 6 is be persistent, and also goes without saying, polite. I read a really interesting statistic a few years ago that said that the average new customer requires 11 interactions with them before they actually purchase. And the same article also shared that most people give up after the third no. So it's really difficult to keep showing up and keep giving the love when you feel like you're just getting smacked back all the time. So I think the key is to make your follow-up not too frequent. So decide on what's kind of a natural and feels like a non-pushy period of time to leave between follow-ups. The other thing I found as well is to always have something to offer at a follow-up. So you found an interesting article that might be relevant for them, or you're hosting a free webinar, you'd love for them to come. Or, oh, I saw that, it sounds stupid, but just these little thoughtful things. Oh, your favorite band's playing, here's a link. You need to figure out what sits well with you and what feels organic and authentic most of all to you. But always try and add value with your follow-ups. There's nothing more annoying than someone saying, hey, do you want to have a coffee? And then 2 weeks later, hey, just wondering if you got my email. Do you still want to have a coffee? People who add value with the follow-up are a lot more likely to actually get a commitment, whether it's to a coffee or a meeting or to go, they join the webinar, or they'll actually look at a proposal from you. So think about that frequency and what's going to feel organic and authentic to you, and be led by them. You know, this is where the emotional intelligence comes in, where the DISC behavior profiling comes in. If someone just says, look, please don't contact me again, I'm not interested, well, that's loud and clear. Yeah, you probably don't want to contact them again. However, if someone's saying, just not right now, you know, great to hear from you, but not right now, they're the people that you want to keep warm and stay in touch with. And remembering that staying in touch can be your email newsletter, or some kind of added value email that you send out a couple of times a year, or whatever it might be. Just that recency, so having heard from you recently, and also that frequency where there's a bit of a rhythm that they're expecting to hear from you. And I think that's why monthly newsletters or weekly emails or whatever it is that you do, a twice yearly letter blast in the mail, whatever it is you do, I think that's really, really good, because people know, they kind of start to find a rhythm of when they expect to hear from you. And you're the most recent person that they've heard from as well. So you want to be persistent and you want to be polite, and listen carefully to the no's that you're getting. Are they not right now's, or are they just flat no's? And please fuck off. If it's a PFO, or please fuck off, then you probably want to heed that. But don't be afraid to follow up, particularly if you know that you've got some extra value to add each time that you follow up. Sales secret number 7 is to be flexible with your product. So when I started the Remarkables Group, we pretty much did exactly what we did for 4.5 years. Oh, no, sorry, for 3 years. So which was matching up influencers with brands and creating really awesome branded content campaigns between the two sides. And there was a retailer down in Melbourne that it was kind of turned into a bit of a joke. I met them. I would get into Melbourne probably every quarter when I was running that business. And every single time I went down to Melbourne, they would say yes to the meeting, but they never, we have a really nice 1 hour chat with them, but they never bought anything. A couple of my team, when they traveled down to Melbourne, had meetings with them as well. Again, no sales. We were like, what is going on? Why do they keep saying yes to the meeting, but they seem to have no intention of actually spending any money with us? It did turn into a bit of a running joke. And about, I think it was in year 3 of the business, I had an idea for a program called Rising Social Star, which was essentially like Australia's Next Top Model, but for social influencers. And we'd been kind of workshopping the idea for a few months, and I was flying down to Melbourne actually for a speaking gig. And I said to the team, I'm going to reach out to this retailer and see if they want to have a meeting. And I remember Sarah laughing, saying, of course they're going to say yes. And they did say yes. So I went into the meeting and we had just put together the PowerPoint presentation for this Rising Social Star concept. And I said, fuck it, I'm not going to tell them about our latest influencers, what's happening. I'm going to tell them about this because they haven't bought anything to date and maybe they'll be interested in this other idea. And I was really just doing it as a bit of a kind of, I don't know, a box ticking exercise, I think. Like, I'm here, I should see them, go have the meeting. It was the night before my speaking gig and I was flying out the next afternoon, straight away after my speaking gig. So I sat down, pulled out my laptop and started presenting this new idea. And 10 minutes in, they said that they wanted to commit to it. I created four different packages and they wanted to go for the top tier package and take two out of the four categories that I was proposing. So it was a 50K investment and 10 minutes in, they're like, yeah, we want to do it. And I was like, I was so taken aback because like, but you've never bought anything. I've been seeing you every quarter for 3 years now and you've never once bought anything and now you want to buy this. So it was a really good lesson for me in the fact that just because people aren't buying what you're currently selling, it's not to say that they might not be interested in a future product. And of course, if I had said to them, what would you like to buy? They probably couldn't have cooked up the idea that we had cooked up in terms of that Rising Social Star concept, but they bought it. So I think it was a really, really good lesson for me that, yeah, first of all, the people aren't, they may not be buying what you're currently offering, but they may be interested in a future product. And also just testing the water. I mean, even if we didn't have that Rising Social Star concept, looking back, it would have been worth my while going to them with something new. Because after 3 years, if they're still saying yes to the meeting, but not buying anything, well, they're obviously interested in us. They obviously trust us. They obviously, you know, like spending time with us and value our opinion on things. So it's obvious that probably just need something else, you know, another offer that they might be invested they might be interested in investing in. So just remember that sometimes some of sales comes down to actually being flexible with the actual product that you're offering. And I should also say that they invested the following year as well, which was almost double the investment. And so, yeah, it turned out to be a really, really fruitful relationship. But funnily enough, they never bought anything else we did. It was just Rising Social Star that they invested in. So be flexible with your product. If someone is interested and they are open to having conversations with you, but for whatever reason just haven't invested yet, maybe have a play with creating an alternative product that might suit them a bit more, get them a bit more excited. Sales secret number 8 is to schedule time for sales. Consistency is so key when it comes to sales. And it's also the first thing to go for many business owners. When things get busy or if their mindset goes through a bit of a dip, the sales is the first bit to go because sales is the opportunity to get refused or, you know, to get declined and for people to say no to us. And yeah, it's just uncomfortable. Like, sales is uncomfortable. Even now, if I'm writing a sales email, I feel uncomfortable writing it. Or if it's like a very first conversation with a potential speaking client, I feel nervous about that. So just remember that it's completely normal to feel nervous. What's most important is that you create some strategies to overcome that and put the time consistently each week into nurturing your sales. So for me, something that works incredibly well is follow-up Friday. And what I've done in the past is put a calendar invite on a Friday, more when I was working with corporates, and as in the Remarkables group days, we would have follow-up Friday as a group invite in all of our calendars. And at 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, we'd follow up with all of the people that we're still waiting to hear back from on sales proposals or campaigns or whatever it might be. And it was genius because we all down till 2 o'clock and said, okay, follow up Friday time, let's make it happen. And we get on the phone or we get on emails and get in touch with all these people that were, I suppose, open loops in the business. So there was a really nice team kind of fun dynamic to it. The other thing as well is Friday afternoon is when, you know, people probably just come back from lunch on a Friday. They're feeling pretty chilled and it's a really, really good time to reach out to them for a sales email. Monday morning, I don't think is going to have quite the same impact because people are, you know, trying to make shit happen on a Monday morning. So that follow-up Friday hack worked incredibly well for us. And it was just brilliant because we would get emails back or people would answer the phone and say, oh, sorry, you're the next thing on my list. I wanted to get back to you. Or I was going to get back to you next Monday, but seeing as you're on the phone, let's sort it out now. And I would go home on a Friday evening with maybe 30, 40K of new business locked in. And that was a really, really nice way to head into the weekend. So thinking about what kind of weekly rituals you can create when it comes to sales is a really, really good thing to do because it takes the thinking out of it. You don't have to summon up the motivation to say, okay, I should do some sales stuff. It's Tuesday morning. Let's just make it happen. And then you might not get to it. And then it's Friday afternoon and you still haven't made it happen. So then you don't get to it till the following week. So just creating some kind of a weekly time for you to work on sales is a really good idea. And particularly if it's following up or getting in touch with people. And I would definitely say Thursday or Friday are the best days to do that because, yeah, as I said, people have probably broken the back in their week and they may be a bit more receptive to a sales message from you at that point. Sales secret number 9 is to see every relationship as a 10-year one. Don't see people with dollar signs in their eyes when you're dealing with potential customers because, I mean, you know when you're dealing with a salesperson, and whether it's in person or you're getting emails from someone or it's over the phone, you know when they're just interested in the sell, almost like on an intuitive, energetic level, you know. So I've always tried to do this, is to see every person, whether it's this business or my previous business, as a 10-year relationship. And funnily enough, a lot of them have turned out to be that because I know my beautiful Woolworths client, Melanie, and she's been she was my client in Woolworths as part of the Remarkables group, God, seven years ago. And she's still she still buys things in my business now today in the Lorraine Murphy business. So seeing people as a 10-year investment in terms of relationship, I think goes a really, really long way in gaining their trust. And also it's just a nicer energy to have. You know, you're not just about, okay, I want to get the $100 for them to do my online program. You're actually looking at them almost like as a lifetime value beyond 10 years in your business. And as I said, people can feel it. They know when you're long-term invested in them as opposed to short-term invested, and it makes a huge difference. And I know for me, like some of the calls that I make in my business, like I will give someone epic value on something. So for example, I've only had three requests for refunds in all of my programs since I started doing a refund policy if people weren't happy with the program. And one of them asked for a refund. She'd come on a retreat with me. She asked for a refund because she said the program wasn't as good as having me one-on-one like she had experienced on the retreat together. And I kind of felt like, yeah, I know, but it's a program and you probably should have known that. But for me, I'm seeing I've got a 10-year investment in her. So rather than me saying, okay, I'm going to hold on to the $300, I actually said, that's fine. Like, totally get it. Sorry that it didn't, you know, deliver how you wanted it to deliver. And we'll arrange a refund for $300. And funnily enough, she actually used that refund towards my couple goals program with her husband. So just examples like that, I'll always try and surprise on the upside with someone, give them that bit more extra value, bit extra love than they were expecting, because I want them to stick around for 10 years. I don't want them to get pissed off and, you know, not want to invest in my business either energetically or financially anymore. And I know you've probably heard the stat that a happy customer will tell one other person and an unhappy customer will tell 6 other people. So I'm sure you've all experienced that, where you haven't left a Google review for months on end and then you have a really, really, really bad experience and you just have to jump on and give the Google review. So unhappy customers are going to tell a lot more people than happy customers are. So I think just remembering that as well will, I guess, give you the justification to actually see people as a long-term investment as well. Now, the other thing I really wanted to say on this is, selling's great, yeah? Like, we want to be bringing in new money into our business. As I said at the very outset of this episode, it's the lifeblood of any business. There's no business problem that sales can't make go away. However, what I do want to be really clear on is that sometimes a more efficient strategy to bring in more money to our business is to increase our prices. So what I mean by that is so I know, for example, when I started mentoring, I would charge $1,200 for a 4-hour session and a follow-up call. And what I realized then was that, okay, I was pretty much booked out immediately. Whenever I would open up 4 spots, they'd be booked out within 24 hours. So I realized, okay, my prices are too low. So the prices started to increase, and I'm actually increasing my prices for mentoring again from the 1st of January next year, so 2021. And so the thing is, right, if you think about it, if you're charging $100 for something and you've got, let's say you've got 10 customers paying $100 every month for whatever product it is, right? You're making $1,000 a month from those customers. If you then put your prices up by 10%, then you're charging them $110 by 10. So you're charging them $1,100. You're now making $1,100 a month. If one person says, nah, I don't want to pay that anymore, it's not worth my while, then you're still making the same amount that you were making before that, but with less relationships to manage. So I hope that very simple example makes sense. My whole point here is that if we increase our prices by 10%, 20%, God, 50%, if you're getting incredible demand or pretty much everyone's saying yes to your product or service, you probably know you're too cheap. So if you increase your prices instead, it means that you don't have the massive effort of going out and finding new customers, but you're making more money and potentially streamlining your business by dropping off the people who maybe aren't as invested as other people in your, as other clients are in your business. So I know it sounds a bit strange to think about pricing strategy as a sales strategy, but that's essentially what it is. And what I have found time and time again, that whether it's my business or mentee's business, when we've worked on this strategy together, they put their prices up and it's like the biggest deal in the world and they're freaking out that everyone's going to say no and nothing happens. Nothing. The world just keeps going as it was. They get the same amount of conversions as they were getting, but they're now making 10, 20, 15%, 30% more money. So think about that as well, that I know this is an episode about sales and it's all about getting that money into your business, but sometimes the easiest way to get more money into your business is to actually increase your rates. And of course, elegantly communicate that with your customers, to your customers as well. Now, the last sales secret that I wanted to share, this is number 11, is to say thank you. And I really think this is a very it's an undervalued element of sales, because the happier we make our existing clients, the more they're going to tell other people, obviously that they had a good experience rather than a bad experience, and also the more likely they are to come back and work with us again. So being very mindful that how we deliver our service. I mean, I used to always say to my team, and I still do to my existing team, everything we do is communicating. Everything we're doing is selling. How I do an Instagram story, how Danelle on my team responds to a mentor inquiry, how AJ responds to a speaking inquiry or deals with one of my mastermind group. You know, that's selling my business, because everything I do in my business and my team as an extension does in my business is communicating what we're like to work with, what our values are, how much we should be trusted and so on. So really thinking about how you are taking care of your customers, that's the best way you can sell, because they'll keep coming back again and again and again. And something really simple way is just to say thank you, you know, sending a thank you card, sending them a little surprise and delight, something on their birthday, or if they get shortlisted for an award, sending them a bar of chocolate and a congratulations card. Making your existing clients feel like rock stars, because obviously they are rock stars, is a really, really great way to future-proof you against losing customers and clients. And also just to, as I said, build that 10-year horizon when you think about your relationships that you want to have with your clients or customers. So saying thank you, nurturing those relationships, it will go a hugely long way in having that long-term revenue success for you in your business. Okay, I feel like I just went at speed through those sales secrets. So I hope that there's a gem, if not a few gems in there for you. As I said, these are all hard-earned lessons and I was really, really keen to share them with you as part of this episode. And also just remembering that, I mean, all of these secrets or lessons, they're going to translate through to various different types of selling, whether you've got an e-commerce business or you've got an agency business or you've got a manufacturing business. These secrets hold, I believe, to multiple different types of businesses. So what I really want you to remember in closing on this episode, sales is about showing up. It's about showing up. It's about consistency. It's about trying new things, figuring out what works, changing what doesn't work, and just learning and doing the whole fecking thing again. As I said at the outset of this episode, I'm still learning about sales. I'm still getting aha moments and going, oh God, I really shouldn't have done that. That was an absolute disaster and so on. So really think about just showing up. That's all you need to do when it comes to sales. Show up and be prepared to learn and be prepared to stretch and grow and develop. And remember, constantly be nurturing that money mindset. I would love for you to go back and listen to episode number, 52 of my show, because I think that will really give you some really big hacks in terms of building that money mindset for yourself. And as always, just remembering that practice makes permanent. Just keep showing up, keep practicing, and you'll start to make these skills permanent in your life and in your business. And as I said, there is no problem in business that more money cannot solve. So farewell with your selling. And I would love to hear, of course, how the tips work for you. There you have it, my top sales secrets revealed. As always, I love to know what's working for you. What are your biggest takeouts from each episode? So please do let me know via Instagram or email what you've learned from this week's episode. Also remember that I am putting together a couple of different business accelerators in the coming weeks and months. So if you want to know more about them, be on the list to find out more. Please do use the link in the show notes to register your interest. Or if you get it, the email that I send every Friday with the podcast episode, you've got buttons in there that you can use as well to register your interest. And yes, super easy. Just give me your name, email address, and let me know if you're a scale or startup. And yeah, I'll be in touch once there's more to share. Okay, everyone, much love this week and looking forward to next week when I've got another interview with an amazing entrepreneur to share with you. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is @LorraineRemarks. And through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.